From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the State Ethics Board rules lobby groups will not have to retroactively disclose their donors. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his thoughts on those new ethics rules. And the Patient Safety Advisory Committee makes recommendations that could save New York $12 billion a year in state health plan costs. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The State Ethics Board has ruled that lobby groups, including one closely allied with Governor Cuomo, will not have to retroactively disclose their donors. The proposed new regulations will require that in the future, contributions of over $5,000 for the Committee to Save New York and other groups will have to be made public. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The new Joint Commission on Public Ethics rules say donations of more than $5,000 made after July 1 of this year will have to be disclosed in reports due to the commission starting next year. The rules for the first time affect not-for-profit 501c4s and include the Committee to Save New York, a lobby group which is closely allied with Governor Andrew Cuomo's agenda. Critics say the not-for-profit entities have been increasingly used as a loophole to keep secret the names of donors who help politicians. The Committee to Save New York has raised and spent millions of dollars on television advertising to promote the governor's issues, including the state's property tax cap and the governor's budget proposals.
Together, we're putting the governor's plan to create jobs and cap taxes to work for the benefit of all New Yorkers.
Questions have been raised about the influence of the Committee to Save New York donors on the governor. The New York Times revealed that the committee received millions from the gambling industry in late December 2011. Just a few weeks later, Cuomo announced that a convention center and gambling complex would be the centerpiece in his State of the State message. The governor has since dropped the plan and denied that the money in any way influenced his actions. Under the proposed new ethics rules, lobbying groups like the Committee to Save New York would not have to disclose the gambling corporation donors or reveal any other past contributors. Governor Cuomo, in a recent interview with public radio, said he does not think that the lobby group should have to disclose donors retroactively.
The legislature didn't pass a retroactive law, just as a general rule, retroactive laws are looked down upon because people conduct business under a current set of laws with current expectations, and then you come along in the future and say, well, I'm changing everything, and I know you acted in good faith on a basis, but I'm changing the basis. So I think retroactivity can be precarious.
The governor says the rules going forward would be significant, though, because New York will be the first to require that the not-for-profit 501c4s disclose any of their donors at all.
We are the only state in the nation that will require this disclosure, the only state in the nation. So that is a real feather in our cap.
Susan Lerner with Common Cause testified at a recent ethics panel hearing in favor of retroactive disclosure of the lobby group donors. Lerner says, nevertheless, she's satisfied with the new requirements to disclose donors going forward.
They've done a very credible job on these regulations.
Lerner says the new rules also attempt to limit a loophole known as bundling. The $5,000 reporting threshold would be reached if all the members of a household combined give more than $5,000, or if a company and its subsidiaries donate a total of more than $5,000.
Which is, I think, very forward-thinking. And that is that they define a single source as not just an individual or a company, but a single source can include two people who are related or live together, A single source would be a parent corporation and its subsidiary corporation, which is the way in which I think most of us think of single source, but it's rare to find it actually memorialized in rules this way.
Common Cause is also a not-for-profit group that will be covered under the new rules. The group currently makes all of its donors available on its website. The first time that the public will view the names of the donors from the other lobby groups will be January 15, 2013. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, this week, the State Ethics Board ruled that lobby groups, including one closely allied with Governor Cuomo, will not have to retroactively disclose their donors. And this has to do with the Committee to Save New York.
Well, look, the Committee to Save New York is the Cuomo face. From the very beginning, they collected money to support Governor Cuomo's rather conservative program in New York, business-oriented conservative. And I, for example, would love to know just who put into that pot. So we know who the puppet is dancing to. So this is very important. Well, okay, so then he has this new group, which is supposed to be the final answer to ethics in New York, which turns out to be sluggish, not doing a terrific job that people, you know, have great respect for. In fact, there have been some implications about some of the people who are serving on it and what they're doing. But in any case, this group now comes on and they say, and because they've been stung by criticism, they say, from now on, everybody who gives money to these PACs has to be identified. Oh, by the way, the people who gave money to the Cuomo PAC, which is the Committee to Save New York, he might deny that it is, but it is, they don't have to tell retroactively. Now, it may be legal, but it doesn't pass the stink test. Because why in the world would you say to people who have given millions of dollars that you're exempt, except you're sitting there at your desk and say, you know, maybe some of these people don't want to give money, wouldn't want to give money again and all the rest of it, so maybe we'll let them off the hook this time. Not illegal, but very stinky.
Let's stick with the governor for a minute, because he's been taking some heat lately, Alan. We've seen editorials in the New York Times on his lack of transparency. We've seen some accusations come forward about his when he was attorney general and his role in the state police probe. And now we see folks who are rallying nationally against hydrofracking are using him as their example of who to go after to stop it.
That's right. You know, the one thing I can tell you that Andrew has told me, Governor Cuomo has told me to be more respectful, has been in the past that the worm will turn. He knows it. Turned on his father, who is incredibly popular. Turns on every politician, because you can't be all things to all people. But there are some things you can do that will keep you in the limelight and keep you high up. What you don't want to do is to make too many mistakes. When, in fact, it turns out that you have sent operatives into the archives. So from the time you were attorney general, stuff that you actually sent over, and you sent very little over compared to, for example, to Elliot Spitzer, to the archives, all of a sudden that stuff begins to get combed, begins to disappear, and the reporters begin to call it Filegate. Again, not illegal, but not smart, because people come up with, what do you got to hide? And interestingly, everybody's been looking at the stuff that got taken out, of which they have, of course, gotten copies, of course, and they can't find anything wrong with it. So what's to be said here? Well, maybe they're just so scared of their own shadows that they don't want anybody to have anything. And that is not a good idea. And that's what gets you lead editorials in the New York Times, going after you, lead editorials in the small but significant Kingston Freeman, the former state capital before Albany of New York, always had an important role to play in. And here in Albany, the Times Union, so that you really can be too cautious and too smart for your own good.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. A patient safety advisory committee estimated that their latest recommendations could save New York State almost $12 billion annually in state health plan costs. But apparently, no one is paying attention to those recommendations. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
According to the Albany Times-Union, the New York State Health Department ignored recommendations offered by the New York State Patient Safety Advisory Committee, which was created to prevent medical deaths, stem hospital errors, and publicize doctors' practice histories in the form of a physician profile. The panel was charged with enhancing and improving public access to healthcare information, but the newspaper found that top officials ignored years of work by the advisory committee. Eileen Carina is president of patient advocacy group Pulse New York. She co-founded Pulse of America. Back in 2000, she was involved in getting New York's Patient Safety Center up under the state's Health Information and Quality Improvement Act.
The Patient Safety Center is a valuable tool to New York State, but it needs to be accessed, it needs to be known about, and it needs the patient and family voice more active and involved. And the issues that they take up need to be things that are directly related to patient safety in the hospital's healthcare setting.
Medical harm occurs 15 million times a year, according to estimates by the nonprofit Institute for Healthcare Improvement. Carina says the system is wrought with problems.
The problems haven't stopped. The 1999 Institute of Medicine report came out that as many as 200 people a day are dying in hospitals, and which is 98,000 people a year. Many, many medical professionals are saying that there's many more than that that are being injured and are dying, and not nearly enough is being done.
State health officials argue the allegations made by the newspaper are false. Bill Schwartz is the director of public affairs for the New York State Department of Health.
There are numerous examples of the Department of Health working with these committees. In some cases, the recommendations were not only reviewed, but were in fact adopted. In fact, the commissioner of the New York State Department of Health, Dr. Shaw, has invited those committee members to continue, if they so choose, to provide input and recommendations to the department around our efforts regarding patient safety and quality going forward.
Committee members did not return calls for comment. The law that created the Patient Safety Center states, quote, "The center shall provide a report of its findings and recommendations to the governor and legislature and make such report available to the public at regular intervals." Governor Andrew Cuomo's office also did not return calls for comment.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The spiny water flea, an invasive aquatic plankton, was confirmed in the Champlain Canal system this month. Scientists in the region are now asking New York State officials to close gates in the canal system to prevent its spread into Lake Champlain and other water bodies. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
Within the last few weeks, researchers confirmed the presence of the new invasive in the Feeder Canal and the Champlain Canal above Lock 11. To prevent the spiny water flea spread into Lake Champlain, Lake George, lake systems in the Adirondacks, and in Vermont, more than 60 scientists, researchers, and groups have signed on to a letter asking the New York State Canal Corporation to immediately close the Glens Falls Feeder Canal. They note that the gates are closed every fall, and shutting them down now would prevent the invasive from spreading. Green Mountain College Professor of Biology Mariel Brooks is co-director of the Lake Champlain Research Consortium.
Once the spiny water flea gets into Lake Champlain, it's really too late to do anything about it. I mean, you can spend a lot of money studying the damage, but there's very little that you can do to get rid of it. I mean, nothing, in fact. So prevention, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, I would say, in this case. And we are all aware that it would cause some hardship to some people, but not nearly as much as would probably occur once the water flea gets there.
The plankton has had severe impacts in other water bodies by disrupting the natural food chain. Lake Champlain Committee staff scientist Mike Winslow says once this organism enters Lake Champlain, there will be no stopping it.
We can't do anything once it's already here. Our only option is to prevent it from getting here. So temporary inconveniences associated with closing the canal can be redeemed later, whereas if we miss this opportunity, we have no way to go back.
Mike Winslow adds that the tiny invasive has a large potential to damage the lake's ecosystem.
It's a huge huge risk. We have no invasive plankton in the lake at this time, so it's an invasive species that's going into a place in the food web where right now it's just as it was when the glaciers left. So it's hard to predict what will happen. We anticipate that there'll be effects on the fish community. We can be certain that there'll be effects on the other plankton that the fish are currently eating. There's some evidence from the Great Lakes that certain fish species don't do well because the larval stages can't feed on the spiny water fleas like they do the native plankton. But it's a big risk, and it's one that we can't undo if it happens.
Email exchanges earlier this week between Tim Myhook, who confirmed the presence of the spiny water flea in the Champlain Canal, and other scientists in the region indicated that the Canal Corporation would not close the feeder canal because of navigation concerns, but the rapid response team is assessing possible courses of action. Myhook, who was unavailable for comment, is co-director of the Lake Champlain Research Consortium with Mariel Brooks, who is frustrated by the lack of immediate action.
We obviously understand that there are costs and benefits to controlling these things, but it's frankly quite frustrating to sit by and see, well, we know this is coming, and not be able to do anything about it because the cost-benefit analysis doesn't ever bring to bear the economic cost of the invasive getting in until after the fact. Future damage is hard to argue. It's just not evident and salient in people's minds.
Calls to the New York State Canal Corporation were not returned in time for this broadcast.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A recent poll conducted by Quinnipiac University shows New York residents are evenly split on the issue of hydrofracking. The survey comes hard on the heels of a new pro-fracking public relations effort in upstate communities. Last week, Buffalo was the stage for a screening of Truthland, a film financed by the Independent Petroleum Association of America. As Danielle Robison reports, the event highlighted how starkly polarizing the topic can be for the public.
Before the house lights dim, the crowd at the Western New York premiere of Truthland is told to be quiet and respectful. Any catcalls or outbursts will warrant an ejection. The warning does not stop many in the crowd from laughing at scenes not meant to be funny. The presence of three police officers in bulletproof vests pacing the outside aisles muffles some of the dissent, allowing the movie to play largely uninterrupted. Truthland's narrator and main subject is Pennsylvania dairy farmer Shelley Depew, who has a hydrofracked well on her property. She wants to know if fracking is safe.
If the real answers were scary, then so be it. At least we'd know what we were up against.
Truthland presents itself as a documentary. It shows Depew on the road with a camera crew interviewing academics and officials to learn the truth about fracking.
I'm not an engineer, a scientist, or a gas driller. I'm just a Pennsylvania mom. I needed to talk to an expert.
The title of Truthland is a play on the anti-fracking movie Gasland. That movie famously showed people living in territory affected by fracking igniting their tap water. Much of Truthland tries to refute the claim that flaming faucets are the result of natural gas drilling, or that drinking water is compromised by the practice.
The movie said water contamination was a huge problem. The experts said it was not. I know which I believe.
Shelley Depew is presented as an objective, unbiased character. But as Truthland progresses, her scripted narration represents a pro-fracking viewpoint. She also makes multiple attempts to discredit the filmmaker of Gasland, Josh Fox.
You can't get much more misleading than that, Josh. It had nothing to do with fracking. So much in Gasland is either half true, unfairly presented, or just plain false. I was beginning to question Josh Fox's motives.
The credits at the end of Truthland reveal it was funded by natural gas companies. After the movie ends in Buffalo, a panel of gas industry representatives gather on stage for a Q&A session, which quickly becomes hostile. Many in the crowd self-identify as anti-fracking. The event devolves into a series of shouting matches.
Now you're editorializing. If you allow me to answer the question, I'll attempt to do so.
Okay, Jim, let him answer.
Okay. No, I think Jim, I heard it.
Are you going to listen now, or are you just going to pout? Good. Okay, thank you. So there was a concern. Sir, it's because you're misinformed. That's the reason. So it's hard to prove a negative.
Make it a question?
Because yeah. You've got people behind you.
How do you sleep at night?
At one point, police are asked to restore order. One officer pledges to shut down the event if behavior doesn't improve. Panel member and gas company owner John Hochul tries to defuse the situation. Truthland is not a perfect movie, he says. Instead, it's a simplified portrait of a complex issue.
Well, sometimes you have to take it to a level for people to understand.
But the audience expresses concerns that Truthland could appear to be independent to viewers unaware of its funding sources. After the panel discussion, Hochul admits the gas industry felt compelled to hit back after Gasland and director Josh Fox identified concerns with the technology. But he says the debate over fracking in New York State is far from over.
There are two perspectives, Shelley's and Josh's. They both go to ask questions and get answers. What does that tell the audience? You may have your own perspective. Go out and get your answers.
Shelley Depew came to the screening in Buffalo, but left without speaking to the crowd or media, and she did not respond to repeated requests for comment. Her Pennsylvania property now sports 4 hydrofracked wells.
That was Daniel Robinson reporting. Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between 5 upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1231. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.